Rodgers, who the only place he's going to take it to is the toilet bowl. And then you got Brett Favre, who will take it to the Super Bowl.
I do like me a triple butterburger with cheese. The works, you know, ketchup, mustard, pickles.
Could the package be really good? Yeah, I certainly would love that. But also, to say that, is this look like a rebuild? Probably.
If you think we're in a rebuild, then you got the wrong team.
QB1, man.
Come on, man.
Best QB in the league right
What's
here.
What's up, John Money?
He ran right in front of that light.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Janis.
And Janis, does he stop it? Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
And you're listening to the Poor Man's Packers Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Poor Man's Packers Podcast, the more Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd Boys.
Hello, hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And we are back after another month-long hiatus that I thought would be shorter than this, but hey, here we are. It's not like there's been a ton of news any which way. We'll obviously dive into all the fun stuff like Brazil and Mark Murphy being a doofus, but it's still a lull right now, but these last like 2 or 3 weeks have probably been the most boring time for Packers news literally since like Matt LaFleur took over, just because we always have had Aaron Rodgers shit going on, or maybe more draft stuff going on, but it's been next to nothing. It's like, I knew it was bad when it was the Matt LaFleur, like, didn't know Aaron Jones was going to get cut, was a story for like back-to-back weeks. I'm like, holy shit, we are really in the lull of the off season. But
what a great thing to not have a big thing to talk about, right? All those years past, having Aaron Rodgers, you know, not even always his fault, but always the stories around him. Like, it's just nice.
As a big fan of the draft, I find that I'm less engrossed in the draft this year, because when I have all that drama to read about, then I eventually get sick of it. And it's like, okay, I'm going to go read some draft stuff. Like, I want to look forward. This year, I've hardly read anything. Like, I have a fairly good sense of, you know, some of the guys at the top of the draft we might target, but like beyond the second round, no clue who any of these guys are.
Yeah, it's been fun, I guess, this offseason to not have to worry about Packer stuff. It's more so been like the draft news going on, and mostly what's going on with the quarterbacks, which will be fun to see come draft night. I am curious to see what the Vikings end up doing, because at this point, I feel like if they don't get Drake May, it might not be the worst idea if they just sit pat at like 10 and take whatever quarterback's available. Like, I feel like that might be the best option at this point. But
I have to, right? Like, if
they're talking about moving up.
Unless there's a run on quarterbacks. I mean, that's the risky run.
But you know, you'd get someone like Penix Jr. or whatever at 10 rather than moving up and trading away the farm for J.J. McCarthy. It's like, I don't know if that's really worth it. But whatever, we don't have to talk about those shitbags. We're just going to run through, you know, the fun news that has happened since the last time we talked, maybe skip over some things, then we'll have a little draft discussion at the end too, looking at the Packers roster briefly and some of the roster moves that have been made. Oh, the other thing I want to mention, I forgot about this. Should have led with this. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I went back home, Superior, Wisconsin, because one, I had to help my parents move until finally moved into the cabin out at the lake. They're all retired, sold the house in town, whatever. That doesn't matter. But Eric Hoskinen, who does our outro song, he was playing at Earth Rider in Superior. So I went to the show with a buddy. We stuck around after, and I, of course, talked to him. I did mention the podcast, blah, blah, blah. He said it was great that we support his music and all of that. He said that he will not sue us. So
nice.
I'll say it at the end of this episode, just because I still don't really know what I should say. But he was a really cool guy, too. Oh, here.
You could say thank you for not suing us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess. But that, I'll have to come up with something. I guess you can't see. All the YouTube viewers can see this right now, of which there are no.
Can I just say that there's a K at the front of Koskinen? I have literally thought for this entire time that you were saying Hoskinen with an H.
No, it's.
So it's Eric. K-O.
Yes,
K-O-S,
Eric with a K, and then Koskinen. He just had an album come out 2 weeks ago, too. So go ahead and listen to that on Spotify. I think the second track, one of the tracks, is pretty good. I like quite a bit, but he's a little slower, bluesy guitar man. He had a pretty funny story, too, because we were talking to him for a bit. He opened for Bob Seger back in the day, and he said they were at a hotel or motel, and in the morning, Seger was in, like, a full, like, jumpsuit type deal that he would jog in, and he's, like, gray now, so he's not as recognizable as he was before, and he said he was getting ready for a run, and a guy started talking to him. He's like, oh, I'm seeing Bob Seger tonight. I really hope he plays this song, whatever fucking song that apparently he hadn't played in, like, 10 years or whatever. He goes, and Bob Seger's like, oh, whatever, went on his run. Well, that night, he was like, all right, we're going to play this song we haven't played in 10 years. And he just played that song for that one guy who had no idea that he was talking to Bob Seger when he pretty much requested it. So that's that was a pretty that's good amazing. Story. But Packers stuff, jumping into it. The Packers will be playing in Brazil September 6th to kick off the Packers and Eagles season. It is not the first game of the season. It is the second one. A Friday night game. That's going to be weird. It's going to be on Peacock, too, which is absolute fucking bullshit. That's one of the worst. The NFL, we'll talk about the new rules, too, like the fucking hip drop tackle and other things going on. But I was pretty happy getting this news. You know, we had we knew we were a finalist, but it didn't sound like it was going to happen. A couple Browns players said that it was going to be them. Apparently, the Browns were pushing. This is what Wilde said he thought happened, which means this is what kind of happened. The Browns were pushing so hard to have this game in Brazil. Like, Jimmy
Haslam.
He was telling players that they were going to play in Brazil because he wanted that narrative going. And apparently, because the Packers are so big in Brazil, there was almost a back and forth between Goodell and the Packers. And Wilde thinks that they kind of work something out that the Packers won't have to lose a home game to play internationally in like the next 5 or 10 years. So if true, that's some good negotiating out of Mark Murphy, who publicly was, we heard the runway excuse. Green Bay's airport doesn't have long enough of a runway for a large enough plane to fly all the way from Green Bay to Brazil, which it's pretty crazy. Like, London is a 7-hour flight. Actually, just dropped off my future father-in-law at the airport today because he's going to London. 7-hour flight, and to Brazil, it's 12 hours. I can't believe the difference in how far away that distance is.
Can you tell me what's the appeal to the NFL in having the Browns play in Brazil? Like, that game against the Eagles does not turn the needle whatsoever. Like, who are you trying to hype up? Like, Deshaun Watson? No way. The Browns and the Eagles don't have a history. The Browns are an okay team. They're not great. Like, I just never saw the appeal of the Browns and the Packers being a, you know, finalist, quote unquote. It's like, of course it's going to be us.
Brazil is also, their team colors are green and yellow. So
very true. Very true. Like I said, we are the second most popular team there, apparently behind the Patriots. There's apparently something too with the home soccer team there. Because their biggest rival wears green, it's like a big no-no to wear green at that stadium. So apparently that'll be a thing, which is funny because both the Eagles and the Packers have green
jerseys
in their jerseys. So we'll see. It'll be interesting either way. It's in Sao Paulo, Brazil, which is like the largest city. I'm not very cultured. I don't know much about other countries and shit, but it's a big city. It's not along the coast, which kind of a lot of people presume. And the stadium usually holds 47,000, but it'll be up to 60,000 for this game. I think it'll be pretty fucking cool. I'm excited for, this is lame, but I'm excited for the fans of Brazil. There was one video that went kind of viral of the one guy who has like the Packers Brazil page, which of course exists and has like thousands of followers because the Packers have such a large fan base. But he got a little emotional during it, and it would be, you know, I feel great for them because just this offseason to go from, oh, the Packers have a chance to play in Brazil, to nope, it's going to be the Browns, to, you know, early last week it was Mark Murphy sounds like the Packer is making it sound like the Packers are going to play, to actually happening, to have your favorite football team play in your city when you never thought that would ever be possible would be a pretty awesome experience. And I was even looking at flights to potentially go down there because it's like you're never going to get a better experience or closer to, like, you know, we all crave and see what soccer fans are around the world, and to have that, but for the Packers would be pretty fucking awesome, especially if they end up winning that game. Anything else on Brazil? Are you guys going? I assume we're all gonna.
I was just literally looking up flights. You can take a Delta flight out of MSP. Arrive Thursday, leave Saturday for $1,200.
Yeah, I saw you actually would fly up to Canada and then down
really
to Brazil in for the cheapest option. Yeah, I think it was like Air Canada or something. Other couple notes on this. Matt LaFleur still has not had a home opener at Lambeau since being the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, which is pretty fucking nuts.
When is the last time we opened at home? I think it was like 18.
I was going to say 19. But
it was the Bears game, I think, that we beat the My Leg game. I'm pretty sure it was the last time. Yeah, because that was the last year with McCarthy, and then the next year we played the Bears at Soldier Field.
Okay, the game at Soldier, that was the 100th anniversary of the NFL, right?
Yep, that was 2019. That was LaFleur's first year. The Packers have also, I looked this up, I remember seeing this before. After they won the Super Bowl, or they were in the Super Bowl in 97, they played a preseason game in Japan. And I didn't look this up all the way, but let's say the Packers lose week one in Brazil. I'm pretty sure that means they will be the first team in NFL history to lose on three different continents.
Well, ooh, we've lost in North America plenty of times, so make it four.
Well, but I'm saying North America, South America, Europe. We won the preseason game in Japan.
Oh, we did win that game. Okay.
Yes. So I wanted to look that up because I'm like, damn, that would be a really, really good fact. But now I'm like, I don't even want to tweet that out because like
the rival national media fan accounts.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, either way, pretty cool. I'm glad it's happening week one too, so there isn't going to be a huge, you know, I don't know, it affecting long term. I believe when we played in London, we went on a 5-game losing streak after that, after not taking the bye. So to have kind of a bye week leading up to it with the last preseason game being 2 weeks before that, I think it works out pretty well.
And then it leads into a mini bye because it's a Friday game.
Yep.
I was stunned that it's only a 2-hour time difference.
Is that still what it is? I don't want to get
it. It's a 2-hour time difference. You know, so I thought it would have been a lot longer. Again, I'm not a geography major, so I thought Brazil went further east into the Atlantic Ocean. Apparently not. But at any rate, I mean, jet lag isn't really going to be a thing. Like you said, first game of the year, so nothing is really routine about the first game of the year coming off preseason. So let's get it out of the way. And if that means we don't have to play another international game for a while, I'm all for it.
It was Tauscher said this because he talked to Mark Murphy on the tailgate tour last week. It sounds like they're going to fly out that Wednesday too and play Friday. So they're going to try to make it a quick trip instead of sometimes teams will arrive a week early and get all settled in before they play the game.
I think it's 3 hours different.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that fact check there, Todd. Moving on, something else. Again, this happened like a month ago, but I thought it was interesting. It didn't get picked up too much, but David Bakhtiari went and had a couple interviews with a couple different radio shows. He was on Wildy and Tausch and said a couple things I found quite interesting. One, he said he's halfway there with his recovery. He had his surgery.
Half?
Yeah.
What? How many? It's a 6-year recovery?
No. I think since his newest surgery, which he tweeted out like back in December, January, it was like November 8th. Remember this date? I'm almost positive that's when he got his knee surgery. So it's been 131 some, or it's been like 160 days now. If he's halfway there, it means he wouldn't be ready until like July 27th, which I don't think he's going to be ready then either because he didn't pass his physical with the Packers. You know, we cut him on that designation. But a couple interesting quotes from him. He said after surgery, he realized how much pain he was actually in after this latest surgery. He said, quote, "I was harboring and holding on to a lot of pain that I was trying to justify." So I think a big issue with this and what he had heard from other players who have gone through this injury is like it's kind of a new normal. Well, apparently he thought his new normal was worse than it should have been. And that's why there were a lot of these long-term issues that he had. But either way, he said he still needs to get that hurdle cleared from his doctor. This was interesting, too. They asked him if there's anything he would change. He said, "I wouldn't listen to my coaches as much. Stop being a player's coach and not be practicing full pads on a Thursday, week 17, when we locked up the one seed a year or so sooner. So he's saying that he wishes he wasn't practicing on the day that he tore his knee up. If you remember, that was week 17. That's what he said there. So it sounds like he was upset with Matt for practicing the starters and the full set of guys that Friday or Thursday leading up to the game, which I thought was, you know, a lot of, you know, back in the day, like Chad Clifton, he didn't really practice at all during the week. And we've now seen since then how guys like David Bakhtiari and Mercedes Lewis didn't practice hardly at all during the week, which I think Bach's injury was a big reason for that. But Todd, I don't know, you're kind of, you're so twisting
he's,
your head around.
So he's saying that he thinks he shouldn't have been practicing. And then, and basically what I'm deducing from that is that he thinks then he wouldn't have been injured.
Correct. He thinks he shouldn't have been practicing week 17 during the 2020 season, the day that he tore his ACL. So
I'm not an expert on any of this stuff. I've never had a ligament tear or anything like that. But like what I've heard too is that like a lot of times how this happens is that you get like micro tears and they don't heal. And like that's what, like the Achilles injuries and stuff like that is guys will say like, oh, like it was like bruised or something, or like I kind of strained it like a week ago. And then it snaps like a week later, like those types of things happen. So it's not necessarily like, to me, that doesn't feel like when it's like ligament stuff, it's not like a muscle that you rest for a week and then it's kind of fine. Like these things are like already torn and then they snap is like seems to be right. What happens. And you're not going to sit for a month in the middle of the season.
It takes one bad step or whatever, like, and I don't know how it happened in practice, but I would imagine you're not going 100% all out in practice. So
right.
Was it you took a bad step, you know, sure, maybe, but that can just as easily happen in a game. You get rolled up on by somebody, something happens in the bottom of a pile. You're also going all out in a game. So to your point, like if it's already damaged and you don't realize it, Who's to say you don't get hurt on the third play of the game on Sunday?
Yeah, and these non-contact injuries just feel more to me like it's like the war of attrition. Like it's over time, it's wearing your body out, and it's just a time bomb when you have those little injuries, and then they turn into big injuries. I have no idea, but
I was gonna say, I guess
sitting
we
one practice,
we don't know.
Like I don't like.
I see where he's coming from, especially seeing like how they have changed things after, and it's not like there's a bunch that they get out of the last practice or the second to last practice in the week. Another quote from him along those same lines was, "I love practicing, but they love throwing those guys out there. Maybe I'll be the final straw. They shouldn't practice guys that they know are fine, but they want them tuned up and ready to go." So again, and I think that's the whole, you know, that was the whole talk with like Rodgers when he was on the team and him practicing, even when he had like that thumb injury his final season. LaFleur always talked about the extra juice that they had on the practice field when Rodgers was practicing. So I think it's one of those things where LaFleur is, you know, we've seen he's a bit more, he's turned into a bit of a micromanager here, and he just wants all his guys going full go. I mean, we hear a ton, not just from him, but from players too, and they all kind of usually have the same messaging is, oh, we had a great week of practice this week, you know, shit like that. So I'm sure that's the shit that LaFleur was hoping for. I don't think he was anticipating his, you know, franchise left tackle tearing his ACL because of it.
Let's be honest too. If at the time it was not normal for LaFleur to sit veterans from practice, if he came to Bakhtiari and said, "Oh, well, you've been healthy all year, let's go ahead and sit you for this Thursday practice," Bakhtiari probably would have been like, "No, screw that, dude. I'm fine. I'll go out there and practice." If yeah. nobody else has been doing it.
Yeah. Big Dog might have been taking weeks off then, too, or practices off
Big
then.
Big Dog was also, sure. like, 40 years old at the time.
Well, Bakhtiari's knees are probably not that great. But Tausch has been talking. He plays pickleball. He's like, I can't really play pickleball anymore because he said his one knee's so fucked up from how many, you know, I think he tore his same ACL twice, which I can't imagine, especially those days when surgeries weren't as good either. Moving on, looking at the roster, a couple minor roster moves. The Packers signed Greg Joseph. Pretty typical Goody signing to bring in competition without actually bringing competition. You look at his stats compared to Anders Carlson. They're pretty fucking similar with leg power and field goals made. I think they were both at like 81% last year on field goals. Patrick Taylor, I'm trying to remember exactly what has happened. I know we re-signed Tyler Davis. That might have happened the last time, too. We we did re-sign Eric Wilson. I believe that's new in the last month, which I'm glad. Again, he's getting a little bit more money than Welsh, the other special team linebacker that we signed. Patrick Taylor signed with the San Francisco 49ers. I'm curious to see if he... They're pretty deep at running back, but I'd be curious to see how he does actually getting some snaps. And pretty cool seeing this week, Kevin King signing with the Falcons, reuniting with Jerry Gray, our former defensive back coach, now the assistant head coach and defensive back coach in Atlanta. Hopefully he can stick on. I don't think he will, but after being off for 2 years, nice to see him get another shot. Any thoughts there? I think we signed some other fucking cornerback last week who I'd never heard of, and he didn't even play last year. He spent like a training camp with the Giants, so I don't think he's anyone to really mention.
Jamon Green?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's spelled like
it's
demon.
G-M-O-N.
Yeah, I love the name. I think of like Green Demon when I see his name.
It looks like G-Man. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't think he's ever going to be anything. But any thoughts on those very huge roster moves there?
I mean, I feel like it's good to have Eric Wilson back. Just like we don't have. I mean, we need more depth at linebacker for sure. And it's really, I mean, at this point, you have to pick up somebody in the draft, one or two. So it's going to be interesting. But it's great to have that depth, somebody who's familiar with the team at least. Granted, new scheme. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the only point of note for me is Eric Wilson.
I think you described the signing of Joseph perfectly. I remember the day that we signed him, my friend Jen sent me a text and was like, oh, hey, we're signing a kicker today. And I was like, yeah, probably just a camp leg, I think is my exact response. And then she tells me, oh, yeah, it's Greg Joseph. It's like, yep, just a camp leg.
And I don't think we've cut that other kicker that we signed like a week or two Not after Lesney. The season was over.
No, we haven't.
He's still on the roster.
I wonder if he gets like some type of check for being on the team right now. Like if we wait a couple more weeks until we cut him, like if he makes a couple extra bucks from that. But
I mean, is it something where we just carry an extra kicker on the practice squad?
Yeah,
if Carlson doesn't blow anybody away in training camp, but doesn't and nobody else wins the job, like. Or because like now that that touchbacks are basically, you know, poo pooed, there's really no benefit in having a strong leg kicker that's going to boot everything out the end zone.
Yeah, so I guess why don't we touch on that now too? The new rules the NFL passed. There's pretty much only two big ones: the new kicking rule, which should help us out with Keyshawn Nixon back there. I know he tweeted a couple times. He seems to be excited about it. Where it's basically the kickoff has turned into a punt. You can't move, and neither the offense or defense can move until the receiving team catches the ball. They're lined up at like the 20 and the 30 all the way down. You have to kick it in bounds and within like the 25-yard line. If you kick it in the end zone, it's a touchback to like the 30 or 35. There's a bunch of goofy rules.
Do you want me to run through it?
No, I don't think it'll be good to listen to on a podcast.
I think the biggest thing is that you can't move until the ball is received.
Yes.
And if you accidentally kick it in the end zone to start at the 35, like that's basically a kick out of bounds in that case.
Right.
It will be very interesting to see how this... I feel like it's going to be very touch and go the first month of the season. There was a bit of a back and forth with this rule. It did pop up last year. There was talks of implementing it. The Packers actually voted against it. They were one of three teams to vote against it. And Mark Murphy's reasoning was we would like to have like a preseason to practice it, which is a fair point. But arguing against that, if you're only going to have it for one preseason, I don't think the coaching staffs in the NFL would teach it up much because it's wasted time if it's not going to matter come the regular season. So it does make sense to me to just implement it all at once. We'll see what happens. If it goes to shit, maybe it would be pretty funny if they like reverted a month or two into the season because it's just all over the place. Like teams getting in at the 15 or the 40, not knowing how to kick or return it. So I'm very curious to see how it's going to work early on because I'm sure there's going to be a learning curve. But I think it's going to benefit the Packers. It would be, you know,
there's a lot of rules in this whole thing, too. Like, I pulled up both of them on the NFL's page.
That's why I'm
there's literally two points that are made on the hip drop tackle. And this is like, I mean, this looks like an agenda for a meeting on the other one. It's just like,
so this is the old
pages.
Is it XFL or UFL rule?
Yeah. One of the two. Okay. Yeah.
I read an article after it was passed and they were talking to like coaches and special teams coaches from that league. And they kind of talked about, like you said, that first month, it was kind of a shit show. But then the teams that like figured it out had some really explosive returns. And the teams that didn't figure it out did not do very well at all. So I'll be interested to see the strategy of it.
One of the two guys in the NFL that presented like the new kickoff rules, their special team coaches within the league. One is a guy that looks like Joe Philbin. I forgot his name. I think it's Fossil. He's an old looking guy.
Jim Fossil.
Joe Philbin looks like a fossil.
He kind of does too, but the other guy does too. I believe it's the Cowboys special teams coordinator.
Oh,
but
John Fossil.
John Fossil and Darren Rizzi, the guy who should have been our special teams coordinator from years past, which I bring up on just about every other podcast. But yeah, kickoff rules, whatever. And then the hip drop tackle. I fucking hate it. Everyone seems to hate it. For me, the biggest reason, I don't want to hate, you know, I'm not a conspiracy guy. I'm just a connect the dots guy here. When we're coming off one of the worst officiated years in NFL history, you're still not putting any more money towards officials and making them full year-round employees or whatever.
And you're just making their job harder.
To add in a subjective penalty that is, you know, high speed, bang bang type call, and there's already such little faith in the officials, to me. And the NFL has, you know, just said how hard it is and how they're doing a great job, blah, blah, blah. It's a way for the NFL to control the outcome of games, because at any moment, on just about any fucking tackle that's close, you can call 15 yards and that play's coming back. And I hate that they're giving that much power to the officials, because if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. And I hope we aren't, once again, going to be, you know, the victim of poor officiating because of some rule change, like we one did with Clay Matthews with the hitting the quarterback.
That was bad.
And then obviously, you know, the replacement refs that we had back in 2013, 2014, whatever the fuck that was. So any more thoughts on the rule changes? I feel like it's a little boring, more in the weeds here, but it could potentially be a pretty big change come the regular season.
I think the kick rule is going to be really interesting to see. And then with the hip drop rule, reading it, it's very short. Go on the NFL website if you want to read it, but it's like very specific. So I'm hoping it's only two things, but I'm just hoping it's specific, and it's the one and the other thing both have to comply, and you have to land on the legs. So I'm hoping that it's very sparsely called. I hope that they're not throwing this flag a lot, because sometimes they do make a point to just chuck it and they make an emphasis on certain penalties. But this one seems specific enough that I'm really hopeful that it won't affect the game as much as your conspiracy maybe says.
I guarantee you that this is going to be like the roughing the quarterback penalty when they started calling that differently a few years ago. Like, We're gonna be watching a game, and Gene Steratore is gonna come on, and they're gonna have it broken down like the Zapruder film, and it's gonna be, oh, you know, Jim and Tony, I just don't think that he landed on the back of his legs, you know, sufficiently enough to draw the penalty, and Tony's gonna be going, I don't know, Jim, you know, like it's exactly how it's gonna go. Everybody's gonna get up in arms. It's the same thing as when the NFL. Decided that you could challenge pass interference penalties. Like, everybody knew it was going to be a shit show. Sure enough, it was a shit show, and they quietly undid it the next offseason. Like, maybe the rule on this evolves. Like, there are still some pretty bad roughing the passer penalties, not nearly as often as that first year, but I think this first year it's going to be a mess.
I hope it goes the way of, they had that rule change, fuck, it was probably like 4 or 5 years ago at this point. I think it was 5 years ago now that I think of it, because it was when Game of Thrones was coming back on for the final season, and I remember that was the same year. Leading with the crown of your helmet as a running back, remember how that was going to be a penalty? That does pop up every once in a while, But there was that preseason game or the first game of the season where a couple of running backs lowered their helmet and they got flagged 10, 15 yards, whatever it was. I thought that was going to fuck the game up. It hasn't, so hopefully this will be similar to that.
They just stopped calling it.
Yeah, yeah, as they should. It never should have been a fucking rule. Once again, just a something else, a variable to throw out there. Oh, I guess you shouldn't have done it. Yeah. Other huge, couple of big news items here. The Packers promote Brian Engel, Flea, to Vice President of Player and Health Performance, and Nate Weir to Director of Sports Medicine, Head Athletic Trainer. So Flea was the head athletic trainer, the head medical dude, pretty much. Not Doc McKenzie, but the actual trainer dude. I just want to touch on it because it's just... He's the Vice President of Player Health and Performance. Now, I know names in companies and things are different. Like, maybe you have a bunch of different vice presidents, but to me... Why don't you just make him the fucking president of player health and performance? Because there isn't a president of player health and performance. If not, just give him a fucking different job title and bump up his pay that way. I just thought it was really funny. Todd's just reacting like I'm an idiot.
They're obviously going to hire a president, and it's very clear to me that he is not president material based on these reactions.
Based on the nickname, yeah. People can't respect him because of that.
Well, yeah, he's vice president material.
How can you have a running mate before you have a candidate for president, though?
Mm-hmm, no, it's all the behind. It's the man behind the curtain. You know, maybe he is running the show, but you got to dress for the role, and he's been wearing jeans to work, and so he's got to be the VP.
Yeah, that's fair. The other big, huge news item along with that is Red Batty, the equipment manager, retired. 30 years with the franchise. I mean, you got to tip the cap to him. Ron Wolf hired him from the Oilers a year after he took over the GM job. And I remember because there's a... I think I touched on this before a year or two ago. Because I always go on eBay and look for like Packers shit. And I waste money on stupid Packers shit. And someone was selling like a hoodie or a jacket from the former equipment manager. And I looked up the guy, I forgot the guy's name, and I Googled his name or whatever, and I saw that he got, you know, when he got fired, and then it was Red that took over. And he was, like, interviewed. He was interviewed when he got fired from the Packers. And his comment was, yeah, I guess Ron said I didn't keep the locker room clean enough, so I got fired. And that was it, which is just
canned.
So fucking funny to hear. It's like, oh, the guy couldn't manage the locker room, so he got fired from an NFL team for not being a good enough custodian. It's very funny for how big the league is, and I know that was the 90s, but to hear something like that, quite the chuckle I got.
I saw something, and this is anecdotal. It was on Reddit, so take this for what it's worth, but somebody on a thread talking about Red Batty retiring claimed that he used to work in another team's equipment staff or whatever, and he said that the Packers made their lives so easy because they were so particular about equipment and whatnot on game day. And somebody was like, so, like, what does that mean? How did they make your job easier? And he was like, we didn't do anything. They did everything.
That's something Wes Hodquitz, who writes for the Packers now, used to be with the Green Bay Gazette. He said, he posted some quote. God, I think he even took a... I think I retweeted it. But it was a... He has a quote from Red on his desk about being organized and how being organized is like the most important thing. And that obviously makes a lot of sense with him being the equipment manager, especially when you're traveling and shit. It's funny, Billy, that you bring that up because it's obviously something that he valued here and that too. So... with that, we will have a quick commercial break, and we'll come back and talk about Lambeau and then some actual football stuff. All right, and we are back with Mark Murphy. Mark Murphy, the Green Bay Packers. So I'm sure people saw this, heard this. You know what I think about Mark Murphy, yada, yada, yada. But the Packers are in a bit of a tricky situation. This is a perfect offseason question or thing to pop up because we have nothing else to talk about. If I'm using some of my brain space in the offseason, I'm glad, or about the Packers, I'm glad it's right now and nothing else is going on. So kind of a goofy situation going down. It started happening 2 or 3 weeks ago when the Green Bay Gazette, I believe, ran a story about this, the lease agreement between the Packers and the city of Green Bay. And for those that don't know, and I didn't know this, the Packers have a lease at Lambeau Field through the city of Green Bay, which is a little complicated because that's kind of, you know, I guess I didn't realize they were paying rent at Lambeau, which is kind of funny to think about. But also on top of it, a weird wrinkle is Lambeau Field is technically not in the city of Green Bay. It's in Ashwaubenon or
no,
or
they redrew the lines, I thought, so it is in Green Bay.
Did they? Okay, either way, I guess.
They practice in Ashwaubenon, though.
Okay, so what I'm getting at, though, is Titletown and the shit that they've kind of built around it isn't helping Green Bay because that's Ashwaubenon, you know, for the most part, most of these things that the Packers have built up over the last 10 years. So the Packers go through this lease agreement and they're already locked up for the next 9 or 18 years, whatever. But the Packers wanted to start a dialogue once again for their upcoming lease, their future lease, which Green Bay thought it was. Now, since the initial story, so the initial story ran and then Mark Murphy was at the owner's meeting and he answered some questions, which wasn't, once again, Mark is just not very good at speaking with the public. One, he said that the mayor cut off talks, which apparently was true. He cut off talks after they started talking about this new lease agreement. And another quote that Mark had was, we were going to go forward with $80 million in improvements to the stadium, mostly in the concourse and the concession area. That, given the status of negotiations, we're going to halt those investments. That's going to affect our fans and also affect the draft. And he said this the day that the story broke, which kind of a weird thing. Something, I mean, just me, you know, and I don't like Mark Murphy, but to just, we're already fresh to this news and to say, oh, it's going to hurt our fans is a pretty clear narrative that you're trying to push against the city of Green Bay, which is funny. And then Aaron Nagler and Corey Behnke of Cheesehead TV on their show Packer Transplants, they had the mayor of Green Bay come on, which I was, I'm such a fucking loser. I was elated. I was very happy because I'm like, good. I want to hear both points of this because it's a very complicated, weird fucking thing that I'm never going to fully understand either which way. So anyways, the mayor came on and he said that, you know, they started these negotiations that the Packers started. And there's some other background on this. You know, there's a sales tax that was approved in the early 2000s, which really jump-started the renovations, which makes Lambeau what it is today with the brick and the tan concrete rather than the old green corrugated metal from way back in the day, which just looked fucking hideous. So the Packers in 2019 and 2020, they changed. That's when this lease first started, or when they started talks about this lease. And then in 2022, they made it clear that they were renegotiating. The city of Green Bay, you know, they're just a small city, 100-something, 200-something thousand people. They had to bring in a law firm to help with these negotiations. And for a couple of years, the Green Bay Packers and the city of Green Bay were talking back and forth. The mayor of Green Bay said they had a lot of verbal agreements on both sides, and he thought that they were in a pretty good place. So then on a Friday at 5 o'clock, the Packers sent over their negotiation, their proposed lease, the mayor said he thought that it was written up by people who weren't part of the initial discussion, because all these verbal things they had talked about were not included on this lease agreement. So that's when he ended talks, because he didn't want to keep a lawyer on and have to pay him when they're so far apart, and clearly the Packers aren't coming in with good faith. But when you're ignoring things you talked about, I understand, be a little frustrated. And another thing he mentioned was how, and this is true, and I kind of thought it was a Packer thing, which I did like, but now hearing about the Packers or Green Bay's involvement, how Green Bay, for all the money that they do invest in the area and their tax dollars, how the Packers haven't had a lot of off-season events like concerts and things like that. You know, it's either one in a given year or none, it seems like. And they were promised a lot more of those. So the Packers are like, or Green Bay's like, well, we would like you guys to, you know, it's one of the verbal things that they didn't agree on. But the biggest thing was the Packers are renegotiating this contract and trying to lower their number on the lease by $31 million over the life of the new lease, which I think is fucked. Just alone, inflation. It's a little fucked. And then on top of it, I know the Packers have put money into Lambeau and the surrounding area, But the city of Green Bay isn't really bringing in more money because of that. And I don't know why the mayor would bend down and be like, oh yeah, $31 million. We definitely don't need that for the roads. So again, it's a pretty complicated issue. The mayor brought up, you know, charitable events and how the Packers are great with that and all that. He also mentioned how the Packers have $500 million in like their rainy day account in case shit really blew up. So it's like, why are you trying to lowball us on this lease? But I know it's a lot there. Really fun stuff to talk about. Todd, do you have any thoughts on this issue, this very fun issue between the Packers and the city of Green Bay?
I think that this is from like Green Bay, from the team's perspective. Let's talk about it like that so it's not confusing. From the team's perspective, this is very like organizational of Green Bay to be like, we're going to do everything we can to not pay anybody any extra money and keep everything in-house. Sure, we'll make our improvements. We'll do, you know, they do a good job with Lambeau Field, obviously, and I think it has good ratings for the facilities for the most part from like the NFLPA and whatnot. But I feel like that is definitely like they're going to do whatever they can to lowball. I think doesn't seem like in good faith their offer, just from what we know, coming in with an offer that's not, you know, with what they were talking about, their verbal agreements and whatnot. I don't know. It just seems like Green Bay, the city has a legitimate like complaint here to pull out of talks. You know, hey, we're paying a consultant to come in here. We're so far off. The lease doesn't end tomorrow. Like, it's just, it's off-season news, right? So it's being blown out of proportion a little bit. But like, yeah, it just seems like Mark Murphy's trying to get in here and make things a little bit cheaper. If he can sew this deal before he leaves, great. But it's not going to happen. I mean, where things are at now, this is not happening. It's going to be whoever, you know, succeeds him. It's a Russ Ball thing, whatever it ends up being. Like, this is not, he took a shot at it. They're done. Move on.
I was kind of wondering the same thing, Todd. Like, what's in it for the Packers, for Mark Murphy to try and lower their lease number? Obviously, it's to make more money on the back end. And I think it's ridiculous that Mark Murphy is going to tell the fans with a straight face, oh, you're going to have a worse experience at Lambeau Field because we're not going to spend $80 million on... So you have a different brand of hot dog at Lambeau Field? Like, give me a break,
I hate him.
Dude.
I hate him so much.
So I wanted to... I was, as you were going through this, Spencer, I was thinking about, okay, what's the motive here? So my first thought was, well, when's the NFL collective bargaining agreement up and when's the media deal up? Like, what's the timing on that? Because we know that the next media deal, the NFL is going to be making a shit ton of money, and that then gets passed down to the teams. So we know that the Packers are going to be making more money. The collective bargaining, the media deal expires in 2032. The Packers lease at Lambeau goes for another 9 years. So that's 2033, conveniently, right after the media deal is done. Mark Murphy knows that if this goes to the last minute, the city of Green Bay rightfully is going to point to the new media deal and say, you guys are making all sorts of money that you weren't making before in this media deal. We're going to increase your lease. Do I think it's fair for Mark Murphy to sit here and try and drop that number right now? Absolutely not. But I think it's a bargaining tactic to try and get a better lease deal long term, get something done before the media deal does.
That's a really good point. But like you're saying, I just don't... Is that worth it? The other thing, a really good point that Corey Behnke brought up, which almost hurts me to say because I disagree with a lot of the things that guy says... But he said the timing of this couldn't be worse. When you're about to have the NFL draft coming in right now, you know, next year, and you have this weird relationship between you and the city for fucking $31 million, which is a drop in the bucket with the $500 million that you have saved up in your rainy day account. Another thing that the mayor brought up too is he said, why don't you invest some of that money into the city of Green Bay around it and like build up the history of the Packers shit too? Because he said they invest in the stock market and whatever they invested last year is down 20%. So he's like, why don't you instead invest some of that money within the city, blah, 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 whatever. Obviously, he's going to say that. He's a fucking mayor.
I'm not saying that I agree with Mark Murphy's reasoning here. But again, if he's going out the door in 25, he wants to try and do something.
Right.
I think it's a shitty thing to do, especially 9 years in advance. Like, if it's 3 years, absolutely. Because I don't think it's physically possible for the Packers to leave Green Bay, right? Like, isn't it written into
the team charter
that they can't ever leave Green Bay? Right. And we know damn well that, you know, the Packers are never going to build a new stadium. So it's going to get done eventually.
Yeah, it'll be done. I just don't understand what the point is of...
Because Mark Murphy only cares about making more money for the Green Bay Packers.
And that's,
he sees this as an opportunity to make a little bit more money, and he'll throw out a number like $80 million for new concessions and concourse improvements. Like, what the hell does that mean? You're not getting a substantially wider concourse without huge renovations to Lambeau Field. But the average Joe Blow Packer fan just sees that number and goes, yeah, you should spend more money on Lambeau Field.
I think you said it a little bit too, Billy, that the only part of the whole, the essentially that strip that Green Bay owns, and including like the practice facilities and stuff like that, the only part of that that's actually in Green Bay is the stadium and the immediate lot around it.
Yeah.
So all the investments that they've made, you know, to the west where the, you know, you've got the Titletown district, and I think there's like some apartments even over there, and they own that Cabela's at the end. None of that is in Green Bay.
There's
so like you can't even
some,
say like
there's gotta
we've
be
made
some
all
agreement
these...
that any money that, you know, comes from that is split between Ashwaubenon and Green Bay, right?
I doubt why the fuck would Ashwaubenon agree to that? They would
because it's that, the Green Bay Packers, not Ashwaubenon.
But that's money that they're agreeing to give away. I think that's why where we're at right now, because that's what the mayor's arguing. And when you're looking at it, once again, it's, you know, the big three things for me is the Packers want to hike the rent up. The investments they've put in around the city are not helping the city of Green Bay, and they haven't had as many events at Lambeau, which the city of Green Bay thought they'd be doing. So I understand. I'm on the side of the city of Green Bay on this one. And now, to finish things off, let's talk about the Green Bay Packers. Let's look at the draft. You know what? We're, 10 days away, something? We're less than 2 weeks away, so I'm pretty excited to finally get some brand new best friends to have on my favorite football team. Starting things off, I want to talk about the O-line. I feel like there's been a lot of talk about this. First thing, last week, Rob Domofsky went on Wilde and Tausch talking about the offensive line, and this got some traction, which I was a little surprised about, where he said, I think the starting center is on this team, but it's not Josh Myers, and he talked about a conversation he had with multiple guys within the front office of the Green Bay Packers down during the combine, and how they said that they believe Zach Tom is a Pro Bowl tackle, a All-Pro guard, but a Hall of Fame center, which is something that Rob had actually been saying for quite a while. He's been saying this for a few months, so a lot of people are saying this might be a smokescreen, but we talked about it in the last episode. I think the offensive line is the largest issue or biggest need for the Green Bay Packers right now, and looking at this draft, I think it makes a lot of sense that that's the way we're going to go in the first round. I've kind of laughed at a couple things, like fucking that Book of Eli dude on Twitter. He tweeted out that the Packers have... which I guess this is a fact, so I can't be too pissed, but we've only drafted two offensive linemen in the first round since 1998. And he's like, oh, it always feels like we're going to draft an offensive lineman, but, you know, it never happens. At the same time, the last 15 years, looking at the offense, the number one position we've drafted on offense is the offensive line, still only just taking Derek Sherrod and Brian Bulaga, but it is still something that we have invested in. And Matt Schneiden kind of said the same thing too, where he'd be surprised just because of all the, you know, underrated prospects that Goody seems to find in the second and third round. But I really think that we're going to go tackle in the first round, either that or that Graham Barton or whatever, the guy who can play just about every position on the offensive line. And if nothing else, We've heard about Zach Tom playing center since he got drafted. Goody has shown time and time again that he tries to influence the roster, forcing Matt LaFleur's hand in a lot of ways. You know, we knew last year Matt wanted Big Dog back and maybe some veteran receivers, which clearly didn't happen. And I think Goody's going to want to invest heavily at a premium tackle so that Matt is almost forced to move Zach Tom into center, which I'd be fine. You know, we've said it before too that Josh Myers is listed as an offensive lineman on the Packers website, not a center. So maybe it turns into a battle at right guard between him and Sean Ryan. But offensive line, I know there was a lot there that I went over there too, but Todd, any thoughts? Do you think it's as big as of a need as I do, perhaps?
I think we definitely need to draft one or two. I don't know that it's, I'm not saying need as in like the first round. I think you can never have enough depth, and the Packers have shown, you know, over the years that picking up guys in the second, third, and fourth round, even later, can be super beneficial. And I think that there's probably a lot of guys that have a lot of value in the mid rounds too. I'm not saying that, you know, what you touched on too, and those guys from the first round, the dude from Duke seems, he'd be great, right? Like, can play everywhere. He's got Packers written all over him. I mean, I think it's a need for sure, just to at least provide some depth. It's interesting. What did Yosh end up making in the market?
It's a 2-year deal. It's either $8 million over the whole contract or per year. I think it's $8 million for 2 years, though.
It is interesting if the plan was to move Zach Tom inside, why not at least? I don't know. I just wonder what you do with that, because finding a tackle is a lot harder than fighting a guard or an interior player in the draft. And so we had plenty of skill at tackle, and why not hold on to it? I don't know. Maybe they tried and it just didn't work out. I don't know. I mean, you got Rashid Walker and Caleb Jones and
Luke Tenuta. That's what Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta. I think it's, and we might have touched on this before, but it's Yosh was on the team for two years. Didn't sniff the field. We didn't know anything about him. And that's kind of what Luke Tenuta and Caleb Jones are, who are very, you know, balls of clay. They're both 6'8", huge fucking dudes. And apparently Caleb Jones was impressive before getting hurt. So I think it's perhaps wanting to test them a bit. But I don't think you want to, you know, we got a good top five. We have a proven top five, I'd say. But after that, it's balls of clay. It's athletes.
It's a good point. I mean, the top five is good. Sean Ryan's the weak spot. But in general, I mean, if you were to pick up a guard in the draft, man, I'd be feeling pretty good about the top five there. You know, you're starting five.
Yeah,
but that,
yeah,
that's with Zach Tom at tackle. That's not with him at center. And then what do you do with Josh Myers? It'll be interesting to see if they can draft a tackle. If somebody falls that they really like, I'm trying to, if there's a, there's a tackle from Alabama, I want to say.
There's so many. There's a physical freak out of like BYU. There's a couple really good. There's so many. Just the depth in this draft at like wide receiver and tackle is pretty,
yes,
is pretty nuts.
Actually, that's something that I was looking at, Spencer, because the Packers in like every position, they have a type. And I know that you've talked about it before, like at corner. You know, Jaire Alexander was a little bit of an outlier there because he fell below the height standard. And there is a place for dudes that don't check every box, because obviously Jaire has turned into an outstanding player for him. But to your point, there's a lot of wide receivers and there's a lot of offensive line help, both interior and at tackle. And on defense, what are the positions that we need? It's linebacker, it's corner, and it's safety. Just looking at the players that check those boxes, those physical boxes for the Packers, there was an article that I read a few weeks ago that I actually pulled up on my other screen here on acmepackers.com. There are three total safeties in the draft in the top 100 that meet the Packers' physical traits. There are five corners between the top 15 and or between 15 and 100 because there's two that are likely to go top 15 before the Packers pick. So there's not a lot of dudes to choose from that are going to help. And the Packers have long been a team that doesn't draft for need. They draft for best player available and they make the value fit, right? We've also seen that they will, they may not value safety as much as we think they will, or linebacker high in the draft, I would say.
I would say the Packers in general, but it's very tough to say Brian Gutekunst is like that because he did use a first-round pick on both Quay Walker and Darnell Savage. You know, before that, I would agree with you.
Right. Before that, it was a long, long time.
Yes. And that's kind of my argument with the people saying we don't draft offensive linemen. I'm like, well, every year is different, and this year just makes a lot of sense.
He also comes from the Ted Thompson, you know, tree, right? And Ted Thompson rarely draft a linebacker and a safety high. My point is, yeah, there are very few players among those positions that we would think fall within the list of players that Green Bay would pick. There's a boatload of offensive linemen, both tackles, yes, and interior. Yes. So just looking at the numbers game, if the Packers don't think the value is there for an Edger and Cooper early in the second round, it feels like we're, you know, probably going to go look at offensive line again. And if there's a run on corners that Cooper DeJean and Kool-Aid McKinstry are gone, those are the only two corners that meet our, you know, the height requirements or the physical requirements. So could we trade back? Absolutely. Could we trade up to go get one of those guys? Absolutely. But with the number of offensive linemen that meet it, I think it's likely that we might double dip in the first three rounds of the draft on offensive line.
I will say, I do think Goot has picked outside of the physical, what you would think are the physical for offensive linemen. He's gone outside of the super athletic trait a few times at linemen.
I'm trying to remember. Rashid Walker, well, he's got super long arms. He might not have hit it. I'm trying to think.
They're still physical guys, but they don't necessarily fall in that RAS score.
Yeah,
for a lot of like, what he's done for linemen. So that might be something that's different.
He has gone away from it in a couple spots. Amari Rodgers, too, was outside of the normal thinking for Packer wideouts.
Here's what Justice Mosqueda wrote a few years ago when he did his original deep dive into this that I'm talking about. Basically, Green Bay has been quite stringent on the offensive line. They don't necessarily eliminate non-college tackles, but it's worthwhile for them if it's somebody that, you know, that is not expected to play center. And then sub 7.78 three cone and a sub 4.75 short shuttle. So some of those quicker, more athletic guys.
Yeah. And that's why it seems like that Barton dude out of Duke, I mean, he's got like a 9.98, whatever the fuck it is, his RAS score. He seems to be the guy. The other thing I heard some people say like, oh, it might be tough to transition to a different center with Zach Tom. Josh Myers going into last year was saying how tough it was going to be going into the season because he didn't have Aaron Rodgers anymore to help him out. So it's not like you had a huge proven veteran in Josh Myers they were replacing. And Zach Tom seems to be very, very bright on the offensive line. Like, he's a very well-spoken, smart dude. And I've mentioned before, like, after practice, that guy's looking at his iPad, looking at his practice reps to see how he can be better. So I think he can... Not like that's one and the same, but I think he would be able to take on the challenge of calling out, you know, protections and all that. Looking at some other spots, too, just touching on these. Running back, you know, Bailey, you were saying you don't think we're going to, or not that, but you think we're going to invest twice maybe with those five top 100 picks that we have.
We have five top 100 picks. If there's not a lot of guys at linebacker, corner, safety, maybe a couple on offensive line, there's a few running backs that fall in there later on in that top 100.
That's what I'm looking at. So I was trying to find the quote because I thought Goody said that he wants to have a bigger back and a faster back. All I could find is he said that he does want a bigger back for short yardage stuff. But when he was talking about that, he was assuming Aaron Jones is on this roster. So I don't know if that means he just values a bigger back or he does want to have that lightning and thunder or whatever going on. Because I still think we're going to use one of those top five picks of ours to draft a running back, if it's Brooks out of Texas or if it's the guy out of Tennessee, Jalen Wright, I think those guys, I mean, Jalen Wright, he's kind of weird. He's like Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon mixed together, where he has Aaron Jones' talent, but he kind of has A.J. Dillon's vision, which isn't as good. But if you can run really fast, sometimes if you luck into the right hole, all of a sudden it's a big break. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. Other than that, on the offensive line, tight end, maybe we take a chance. We still have Ben Sims, who was the rookie blocking guy. Obviously, Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave. Tyler Davis coming back too. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't take one. But at the same time, I would, you know, Goody could do anything and it wouldn't really surprise me at this point. Quarterback, I know there's the Tennessee guy, Todd, that you like. I hope we don't invest there. And then wideouts, if there's something that wouldn't shock me, but would surprise me, just looking at this team, the roster buildup and everything, contracts, yada, yada, I wouldn't be surprised. And if I was the GM of the Green Bay Packers, I might be shopping Romeo Doubs right now. Or if Christian Watson could be healthy, maybe him.
Yeah.
I think Goody really likes him. And I didn't look at Jonathan Taylor's contract that he got last year. But I do wonder if there is some remorse from Goody for not trading Christian Watson for Jonathan Taylor last year. And potentially, I don't know what he got. I would think maybe Josh Jacobs got the same or more because he hit free agency. But that would have been a net positive, I would think, for the Packers if he had made that move. But either way, just looking at it, right now, if you're asking me who the wide receiver 1 and 2 are going to be for the Packers 2 years from now, I'm saying Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks. Next, not this year, but the year after, Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are going to be in their contract years. You know, and they're both they weren't first-round picks, so you can't give them those fifth-year options. Looking again at the tight ends, Tucker Kraft and Luke Musgrave, I think we are going to start developing into more of a heavy set team, wanting to get both those guys on the field. One, they're very, very talented. Matt wants to run the ball more, but also tight ends are cheaper. So if you can move one of these wideouts right now, not have to worry about paying them in the future and get some type of asset back, I wouldn't be against it. I know I was against the like Rasul trade and team morale shit before in the past. But just looking at numbers, and again, if say they do it before the draft or doing it, this is a very deep wide receiver class once again. And if you draft a wideout with a top, you know, 100 pick again here, you're going to look like a doofus because you're going to have to, you know, Bo Melton would turn into your sixth wide receiver, which probably means he's getting cut. So I don't know if you guys have any more thoughts on the offense. I kind of babbled there a bit, but I think it's very interesting.
I don't necessarily want Joe Milton, but I love Joe Milton. Yeah.
The Tennessee quarterback, yes.
Yes. That deep ball is something. He's going to be fun to watch wherever he goes in the preseason. I hope he gets some reps, and it's going to be fun to see. I hope he just chucks a few deep balls, right?
It like, sounds like he's a knucklehead. That seems to be the
negative.
He may
be, but like that arm, the dude's got an arm. Like he's got like a Jamarcus Russell arm. From your knees, just chucking it 65 yards. Like he's got that kind of arm. Like at the combine, it's just beautiful when they send him and all the other quarterbacks on the deep route. They wait, you know, like they're two seconds and crow hop and throw, and he just waits. Like he's patting the ball. He's fun to watch.
I mean, Goody did say that he wanted to get back to drafting a quarterback every draft. Yep. He even threw out the idea of drafting two, which I think is absurd this year at least.
That is absurd.
But I mean, if you're going to draft somebody, it's going to be, you know, lower in the draft. I've seen some talk about like maybe we would take a Sam Hartman. He's kind of the same type of player as
Notre Dame. Sean Clifford. He played in college forever, like
right,
Sean Clifford.
Exactly. But I mean, to your point, Todd, like, Joe Milton is a completely different type of quarterback than we've had in Green Bay, like, for a long time. He's athletic. I mean, Jordan Love is athletic, but Joe Milton will run away from dudes.
I do wonder how they're viewing that, because I think Clifford was brought in not for what he does on the field, but what he does off the field, because it does seem like he knows how to like run an offense, and he picked it up, and I think he's a good guy to ask questions and shit in the room. Maybe Milton is a project guy that you could throw on the practice squad, or maybe you could put Clifford on the practice squad. I mean, God, the one big throw Clifford had last year against like the Vikings where he threw it deep, I think, to Bo Milton too. And it's just, that is not an NFL arm. I don't know.
It was a bad throw.
It was a bad completion.
it helped that he was open by 15 yards, but.
Is there, who's got like the worst QB situation, but no picks? Where's Gardner Minshew? Isn't he starting this year? Okay. I want him to go to Carolina so he can play. That's what I want. I want Joe Milton to go to Carolina and actually see the field.
You want him to go to Minnesota?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Actually, that would be because we get to see him. We could see him in person.
I don't know. Watch him chuck it deep to Justin Jefferson. Oh,
I mean, as long as we're up 42-0,
I was going to say, as an NFL fan, that would be entertaining as hell. As a Packers fan, I would probably hate it.
With the quarterbacks in this draft class and nothing's guaranteed, if the Vikings ended up with Milton, I would be elated. Like, let's not get it twisted here.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. And now I keep going back and forth where I'm like, at first I was like, I don't want him to get Drake May, but now I'm like, they're saying he's kind of a one-read guy, and then Daniels is kind of a one-read guy, and J.J. McCarthy never did anything, and Bo Nix is... I'm just like, I don't even know what I want anymore.
I mean, I would be so fine with them getting J.J. McCarthy. He did nothing, and then the scouts were like...
That's where I'm at.
He didn't do anything because we didn't have to have him do anything. It's not the scouts. Sorry, the team was like... And it's like, I don't know about that.
That's why, once again, if I was a Vikings fan, I would want to sit at 10... not give up future assets and just take whatever quarterback falls there. Looking at the defense here a bit too, I'll just cruise through the positions, just thoughts I have going into the draft. Once again, we'll have a big preview episode before the draft anyways, but D-line, a couple questions here. Talking about trades again, I wouldn't be surprised if we float TJ Slayton out there. You know, he had such a good year last year in a 3-4, and again, you know, the base package, it's not like we run a ton of that. But he's a lot more of a clogger than a disruptor, so I wonder if they would float his name around to a 3-4 team. And then this draft is going to be huge for figuring out what's going on with Kenny Clark, because he's in a contract year. If we don't take a defensive lineman in a top 100 pick, I would think Kenny's probably going to get locked up pretty quick. But if we use a high round pick on him, on a defensive lineman, I would think Kenny's days might be numbered. Inside linebacker. Again, not a lot to talk about, but the thing that I did think of, and it's not like I'm upset with Goody or anything at this, but man, if we would have signed Chris Barnes last year and didn't let him walk and go to the Cardinals, we'd be sitting okay now for a 4-3 defense, having him out there with McDuffie and Quay Walker. Not like it's a huge deal, but he did play pretty well for the Cardinals last year. Edge, again, I think it's something that we kind of sleep on. Our first pick, I feel pretty good that it's going to be either an offensive tackle, a corner, or a edge defender. Again,
chop.
Preston is the only player in his 30s on the Packers. This is probably his last year on the team, so I would think we'll probably invest there pretty heavily, because I don't think we're going to go into 2025 with just Rashawn Gary and LVN being our top two edge guys. And then finishing it off, weird corner room. You know, I feel good about it, but Jair's weird. He's the highest paid corner and hasn't really earned it since getting the contract. Another thing Bakhtiari mentioned in his interview was how they were talking about Jordan Love getting paid this offseason. And he said how some guy, you know, he was like, you know, Taush, how some guys change when they get paid. And I was like, I wonder if he's kind of hinting at Jair, because he's been kind of a knucklehead. But Jair's the top guy in that room. You got Valentine, who played well, but as a rookie and a late round pick. You got Eric Stokes, who was a first round pick, but has struggled one on the field and with the injuries. We have Keyshawn Nixon, who's getting paid as a premier slot corner, but he didn't really play that well last year. And then we got Corey Ballantyne, who's just jumped around in the league. So, kind of a weird room. It's an odd spot to, you know, you have to invest there, but it's like, where or how high do you invest? And then safety, I think it's a need, but how big of a need is it? You know, I still think Anthony Johnson Jr. is fine. Benny Sapp is fine. The undrafted guy, Benny Sapp undrafted. Johnson was a 7th round pick, but they like him. And then obviously Xavier, who we who he signed. It's Xavier, right? God, it's been so long.
Xavier McKinney.
Okay, because there's Xavier Worthy and another Xavier in the draft who are wideouts, who I've been looking up for this draft here too. But that, along with Rudy Ford just sitting out there, I think you could, if you told me we don't draft a single safety and we sign Rudy Ford, I'd feel fine enough going into the season. I'd feel better than we did going into last year. So again, I ranted quite a bit there. Any thoughts on the defensive side of the ball with this draft?
I do kind of think, I don't know what the depth chart looks like right now, but I do kind of think, you mentioned TJ Slayton possibly being shopped. If he's on the team, I kind of feel like his role increases with this defense just as a plug. Like, Devontae Wyatt doesn't feel like a nose to me, but TJ Slayton does, and I think having that nose in the 4-3 seems to be really important to free up a guy like Kenny to go and make those plays. That seems to be really important just from what I've been reading up on. So maybe that's a thing where TJ Slayton ends up getting some more reps, or maybe he gets shopped. I mean, who knows? But and then I do think to like agree with you on that cornerback room. I hate it. I mean, Jair wasn't Jair last year, which sucked. And I don't like Eric Stokes. He's never healthy. I don't think he's ever going to be healthy. I think he's just a waste of space at this point. And do you trust Carrington Valentine out there? And Keyshawn Nixon is he's a returner, right? Like, he got that money to return, I'm assuming, in anticipation of this rule change, right? Like,
well, that's the thing, because sorry to interrupt, but Goody said, and Justice Mosqueda was, you know, sometimes he misses on stuff like reports for who are interested in the draft. But he was so right about this from the get-go, where they paid Nixon as an elite slot corner. And Goody said that they envision him week one being the slot. Like, they paid him thinking he's going to be great. Apparently, Halfley thinks he's going to be a really, really good slot corner. And that's the reason he was paid that way, which I didn't believe Justice at first. And then Goody pretty much affirmed it. And I'm like, well, shit, I guess they really do believe in Nixon. I don't as much, but, you know, they know more than me.
He's no doubt physical, and maybe that's what Halfley is looking for. Yes. So if that's it, maybe there's a clear-cut role for him. Sorry, Billy.
That's what I was going to say. Like, Halfley plays more press than Joe Barry did. So if that's Keyshawn Nixon's game, then sure, there's a spot for him at slot. But I'm with you. I don't like Eric Stokes as a player that you can count on. Like, you just can't. And even before he got hurt in his second year, he wasn't very good.
No.
So if you're telling me that we're going to go into the season with Jair, Eric Stokes, and then Nixon as our top three, like, I guarantee you we're going to be sitting here in week four after Eric Stokes has sprained his ankle again or whatever, and we're looking at 6 weeks out, and it's like, ah, shit, we're down to Valentine or Carrington Valentine at, you know, our second corner. And I like Valentine. I think he has some upside, but he was a seventh-round pick for a reason. He was the star of the preseason last year. Maybe he takes a big step. I don't want to bank on that. And Ballantyne, like, I like him as, like, a fourth corner or, you know, a depth piece, but he's bounced around the league for a reason, too, so it's hard to count on him shutting down Justin Jefferson like he did, apparently, in Minnesota late in the year. So I think trying to get a corner early will be important, but it's really going to depend on how the board falls. I think Cooper DeJean, after his pro day, I don't think there's any chance he falls to us.
There's no chance.
Yeah, I always wonder that shit, because it's like, when you already have guys that you know are athletic, it's like, does that really change? Like, that was the whole thing about Cooper beforehand.
I think it's hard probably for, like, even for scouts to be like, Maybe the scouts get it, but, like, hard if you're a scout to convince a GM to draft a guy.
A white guy. Like,
but for a dude, but coming off injury, too, he suffered a season-ending injury, to show that he has that athleticism back already. Granted, that's running drills in underwear. That's not, you know, real football. But
fair. But speed, but you want your speed to translate. And it's like, if you got guys playing in the ACC versus guys playing in the SEC, and it's like, does this athleticism translate? And the 40 does give you an insight into like, what is it, right? Like, is this guy, is he a 4.5 or is he a 4.4? Because it does matter. It, that little bit, like when they do like the side by sides, the guys that run a little bit faster than each other, that's a tackle or not a tackle, right? Like in space, right? So I don't know. It does matter,
and a dude,
but like,
that runs a 4.4, can he backpedal and flip his hips versus maybe a dude that runs a 4.5, he's quicker out of his backpedal. Maybe he's faster in his backpedal. So it really only becomes an issue when he's 40 yards downfield, right?
Yeah, it's a piece. The last thing I'll say, we need to draft linebackers. There's yes. no linebackers on this team. You've got Quay Walker. Be great if he's weak side. Isaiah McDuffie, I guess, right now is your Mike backer. And then we don't have a Sam. I mean, we maybe have guys you could plug in there. There's some bigger body guys on the roster.
Oh, yeah. Eric Wilson, he's huge.
Aaron Mosby is a bigger body, yeah, I guess.
Who fucking?
He's close to 250. Who's
Aaron Mosby?
Exactly.
Out of Carolina, I think. Anyways, we have to draft linebackers. It'll be interesting to see who's available in the second round, because I think that's probably the earliest we would take one. But
those are the only, I mean, it's not a very good draft for linebackers anyway, but that's basically where the only three dudes in the top 100
fit. It seems like there's a couple good project guys in those middle rounds. I know Justice Mosqueda has brought it up too. It's the guys with like the Hawaiian long fun names that seem to be kind of a little more under
those guys always turn into really good football players.
And the thing too is you look at some of the better inside linebackers in the league. They weren't like first round draft picks. They were kind of these RAS guys in middle rounds that people brought in and were able to turn into a halfway decent linebacker. So I don't know. Well, hopefully we can strike gold and actually find someone who can roam the middle consistently. I still believe in Quay, but this is
Peyton Wilson.
There's another. I forgot to bring this up. Devondre Campbell on his rant, he did say Quay's gonna be fine. He was like, it's like they're making him think too much. It's like, he already had kind of those issues people were talking about before. It's not what I wanted to hear, but.
But you definitely want Quay out there just reading and reacting, right? Like,
yeah,
he's a twitchy guy. Like, he's fun to watch. He's fast. Like, put somebody in the middle who can, you know, be more instinctual and let Quay go chase shit down.
Yes, yes. So we'll see. Is it Cooper? Is Cooper the good inside linebacker
Edgerrin Cooper is the guy that I would love to get in the second round.
Yeah, I like Wilson. I think he's a white guy from NC State, but he is like,
what does it matter that he's a white guy?
It's just that there's less white guys, so it's easier to spot them at that position. So you're like, if I say that and I say his last name's Wilson, you're not going to get him mixed up with Eric Wilson.
So if you're talking about a kicker, you wouldn't say, oh, it's that white kicker from LSU.
Yeah.
I don't have a good handle on the ratio.
No, see, like
black kickers to white kickers.
If you pointed out like the white quarterback, you'd be like, why? Then that sounds funny. But when you say like, you know, when we were talking about Cooper DeJean, obviously it's fine. If you're talking about the Wyatt outs and Ladd McConkey, obviously it's fine.
If you were like, hey, there's a white running back, you'd be like, okay, is it Toby Gerhart or like that? You would know exactly.
Mike Allstott.
Yeah.
So Todd, it sounds like your draft crushes. Early are Peyton Wilson, late is Joe Milton. Accurate?
I don't want Joe Milton on the Packers.
Okay.
Just to be super clear, I just like him.
okay.
Spencer,
yeah, he doesn't really fit.
Spencer, do you have a draft crush?
Not really. It's like, I love that we have all the ammo. I'm more concerned with like the positions we're going to take rather than the actual players. As far as actual players early on, I'm much more concerned with the Bears and the Vikings than our own team. Because if the Vikings fuck up the quarterback position, hilarious.
Oh, please, God.
The Bears, I think Caleb Williams obviously is where they're going to go, and it's probably the right move, and he's probably going to finally be a good quarterback for them. But having the 9th pick, I hope they don't end up with Rome Odunze, who's a really good receiver, who's kind of in that same top tier Marvin Harrison Jr. and Neighbors from LSU. So I hope that doesn't. I'm more so hoping that doesn't happen rather than hoping for certain guys for the Packers.
I like Edger and Cooper, and in the first round, this is a complete pipe dream. I don't think there's any chance we take
him.
Don't
say alt. Don't say alt.
No. Okay. No, absolutely not. Because
I heard someone say that earlier.
Because it would be it's a complete luxury pick, and we are not in a position to be taking him. But I love Jerzon Newton from Illinois, the defensive tackle.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and that's...
He's a dog.
See, that's the one. That's like the fourth position that I could see us taking because it's still a premium pick, too. Because if that Murphy guy falls, too, I could see us doing that, but that seems less likely as well. But then there were rumors of us moving up in the first round. People were talking about us trading with Seattle, which we have like the second or third most ammo in this draft, which it wouldn't surprise me. But again, I wouldn't want to move any of those top five picks to move up because I think this is a pretty deep draft in a lot of accounts. So I don't know, unless it's some home run and someone, I don't know, like moving up to get someone who's kind of meh would be whatever. I'd rather sit pat, whatever,
that,
whatever.
That being said, I didn't like Van Ness last year. I love Newton. Watch, Newton is going to go out and be a complete bust, and Van Ness is going to come out and have double-digit sacks this year because I'm just an idiot on a podcast.
I do still believe in LVN. I do think he's going to he's going to pan out.
Yeah, he should be. He should be just fine. With that, do you guys have anything else? I'm trying to think if we got anything else. I don't think we really got anything else. Oh, I'll say this. Shout out to Acme Packing. I think it was like 2 weeks ago. SB Nation fucking pulled their podcast feeds, which is pretty fucked up. So I assume they're similar to us, where we're with Fansided and we love having a partnership with them and Lombardi Ave and all that. So SB Nation, like, who has Acme Packing and they have kind of a podcast network for every team, they just pulled all their podcasts like 2 weeks ago with these guys who... It's not like they're making a shit ton of money making these podcasts. And they pulled them like a zero cost thing. And they took away, you know, the Repack. And I think Reporting is Eligible and some other podcasts they had on that feed. They just ended all of them because they didn't want to pay for it anymore and cut that part of, you know, the podcast part, which I'm sure isn't super lucrative. But I don't think it costs much either. So that's a real bummer. I just wanted to bring that out there because they're obviously in the Packer podcast world, and I felt pretty terrible seeing that happen to those guys. So hopefully, I love hearing Justice Mosqueda talk football, so it's gonna be tougher here on out with that going on. But you guys have anything else before we get out of here and probably talk maybe next week or the week after? Anything?
Packers, well, we're only what, 10 days away from the draft? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't reached out to Jake Shavink yet, who we talked to last year. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. We'll see. He seems busy. He's got a lot of streams on there. Check him out on YouTube. He's a great
Packer draft. Yeah, he was really interesting to talk to and his insight.
Todd and I last year, when he would start talking about a prospect, we just like leaned back and we're like, okay, he's like, oh, well, you know, he's really good with his outside shoulder, breaking it down and blah, 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 pad level, but all these things. I'm like, okay, you're using terms that we don't say on here. We're much bigger like dummies.
He watches a lot of film and like knows how to break down film. So it was interesting to talk to somebody like that. Who's like, we just talk dumb shit, right? It's whatever pops into my head, right? It's like.
So with that, I don't have anything else. You guys don't have anything else? Nothing. All right.
Nope.
Well,
go Pack.
With that, I know you won't sue us, but Eric Huskinen, please don't sue us.
Anywhere I quit my job. Cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month, and then they took my money away. Yeah, well now I don't care. Cause they ain't working like me down here.
I don't know that they've had a
North America stops at the Panama border.
I mean,
South just America.
Just an imaginary human line.
Colombia.
I would say North America, I don't know anything. North America ends at the funnel of Mexico. The lowest where
Central America.
The funnel of Mexico is a very that's definitely a geographic feature.
I got it though.
You know what I mean? That's
so you think like the Yucatan Peninsula is like the beginning of Central America?
Once the funnel starts getting larger to the south, that's South America.
That's like where the Yucatan Peninsula
is. Okay, then yes. Yep. I will use my dumb terms. You give me the actual...
So like Cancun would be in... You think that's South America?
That's no man's land. That doesn't... Yeah, I guess that I do think of as South America, but if you told me that's its own planet, that's fine too.
Well, the world sees it as the eastern border of Panama. So whatever that's...
Okay.